You're listening to the DX Audio Service.
And this is the DX Audio Service for June 1985. Hello, I'm Fred Vobey reporting. And in just a second, Jerry Starr will be in with a look at the AM switch column. But first, I'd like to thank all of you who have written in and commented about the DX Audio Service and about our feature last month on Reunion Radio and the month before that on WLS. Thank you very much for your comments. We enjoy hearing from you, whether it be good or bad. And, of course, be sure to tell your friends about the DX Audio Service. We'd like to have them subscribe to the service and join us here and, of course, send in muses and get involved with the National Radio Club. Speaking of getting involved, we'd like to let you know about the NR Convention 1985, which is called NRCon 85. It's being sponsored by the National Radio Club, and it's going to be held in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, at the Red Carpet Hotel Complex, July 19th, 20th, and 21st, which is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I have all the details right here in front of me, which I'm going to read to you right after Jerry Starr comes in here with the AM switch column. So you might want to grab a piece of paper and take down some notes. Well, as you may or may not know, Jerry is a fellow broadcaster like myself who's on the radio. And I'd like to do a little flim-flam here on him at this particular time and remove Jerry magically from Youngstown, Ohio, and put him into network radio. So here is Jerry Starr with the AM switch column.
Hi, this is Jerry Starr with another edition of AM Switch from the pages of DX News for the DX Audio Service. A number of call letter changes have happened since we spoke to you last, and we're going to take a look at them, as usual, in order of frequency. On 560, WTBN, Brentwood, Tennessee, becomes WWCR. On 630, KGGR, Opportunity, Washington, becomes KKPL. A further note about this station in a moment. On 650, new station in North Las Vegas, Nevada, will be KBKK. On 680, WKDJ, Memphis, Tennessee, becomes WRVR. On 850, WCGY, West Palm Beach, Florida, returns to their previous call letter of WEAT. And long-standing three-letter call, WJW, Cleveland, Ohio, will become WESM. On 900, WFLN, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, becomes WDVT. 940, WLVM, St. Ignace, Michigan, becomes WIDG. On 1040, news station in Cannonsburg, Kentucky, will be WKOG. 1120, another news station, this one in Duffield, Virginia, becomes WDUF. 1130, KQTI, Edna, Texas, will be KVOJ. On 1190, KEZY, Anaheim, California, changes to KPZE. By the way, the FM station there will retain the KEZY calls. On 1270, WVOY, Charlevoix, Michigan, will change to WKHQ. 1290, WHGR, Houghton Lake, Michigan, will be WJGS. 1370, WSOL, Santee, South Carolina, becomes WMNY. On 1370, WGNW, Sussex, Wisconsin, new call WKSH. We have an additional note on that station in a moment, too. On 1380, WBBX, Portsmouth, New Hampshire, will become WAVI. WWMG, also on 1380, Trent Woods, North Carolina, will be WSFL. 1390, a news station in Fields Landing, California, becomes KKDV. On 1420, KHOZ, San Angelo, Texas, changes to KBIL. And 1470, WKLZ, Kalamazoo, Michigan, new call WQSN. 1490, WQOK, Greenville, South Carolina, also returning to its former call of WMRB. And on 1520, KRSS, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, changes to KJIA. Those two stations we told you we had more on, including KGGR on 630 and WGNW on 1370. Both those stations are presently silent. We assume that applying for new call letters means that those stations will soon be returning to the air. Here are some applications for new stations as the new applications continue to come in by the barrel full at the FCC. On 680, new stations in Newburgh, Kentucky and Okolona, Kentucky. 720, new station in Wake Forest, North Carolina and Tuckahoe, Virginia. On 820, an application for a new station in Jasper, Tennessee. Two on 830, one for Lithia Springs, Georgia and one for Sanssouci, South Carolina. On 1120, Manor, Texas, which is a correction from our previous AM switch. We had previously previously listed that application on 1200, which, of course, is incorrect. 1200 is pretty well covered in the state of Texas. That Manor, Texas application is for 1120. There are two on 1560, both in Kentucky, one in Combs and one in Hazard. And on 1590 in Aguada, Puerto Rico, 500-watt daytimer has been applied for. Three new stations have been granted since our last report. On 580 in Tucson, Arizona, with 5,000 day, 500 night, directional at night only. That ends a battle among a number of different people for the deleted facilities of former KIKX, which operated on 580 in Tucson. On 1030, there will be a new station in Sterling Heights, Michigan, a 5,000 watt daytimer, non-directional. And on 1120 in Maryville, Tennessee, 500 watts D1. We listed that previously, but with the power incorrect. The former listing was for 5,000. The correct listing is 500, non-directional. Some existing stations have applied to make changes. Some of the highlights include on 590, WPLO Atlanta wants to change their DA pattern. 650, WGNZ Titusville, Florida, a station that is new and not on the air yet, would like to change its city of license to Christmas, Florida. On 830, WNYC, New York City, has applied to move to 820 with 50,000 watts day, 1,000 watts night. There is more on this station coming up in just a moment. 840, the station in Lyons, Kansas, KTFR, also a new station not on the air yet, has applied to change the proposed location of their transmitter site, so it'll be a while before we hear that one. On 1250, KLAZ, Little Rock, Arkansas, applies to change their power mode to 2,500 day, 5,000 night, different directional patterns. On 1380, WFCL, Clintonville, Wisconsin, wants to change their power to 5,000 day, 250 night, also U4. On 1400, KKNX, Huntsville, Texas, one of the few Class 4 stations that has not gone to the kilowatt at night, is applying to do that. On 1420, KRIZ, Renton, Washington, power to 500 day and night with different directional patterns. Couple on 1470, WLAM in Lewiston, Maine, would like to change from directional same pattern day and night to directional night only, non-directional during the daytime. And WKCK in Orochovis, Puerto Rico, would like to raise their night power to 2,500 watts. And finally, 1490 WVGB, Beaufort, South Carolina, also one of the last stations to apply to raise to the kilowatt at night. A number of grants have been made to existing stations, some of them relatively unimportant for DXing purposes, but here are some of the highlights of recent grants made for changes to existing stations. On 580, KYUK, Bethel, Alaska, has been granted permission to move to 640 kilohertz with 10,000 watts non-directional day and night, so the elusive state of Alaska may become a little easier if conditions get better. On 760, WCHP, Champlain, New York, has been granted changes in the antenna system. This station is new and not on the air yet, so it looks like they still have some more work to do. On 1230, WFPW, Fort Smith, Arkansas, will relocate their transmitter. 1240, WJTN, Jamestown, Pennsylvania, finally gets full power with 1,000 watts day and night. On 1400, KCOG, Centerville, Iowa, also raising their night power to a kilowatt. 1450, KJMB, Blythe, California, becomes 1,000 watts day and night. KOBO, Yuba City, California, one of those few Class 4 stations which had a close space problem with another station, is finally able to raise their night power to 500 watts. And finally, on 1580, WLIM in Patchogue, New York, has been granted permission to change their critical hours power from 5,000 watts directional to 1,000 watts non-directional. Now here's a look at our Otherness column with news and comments from all over the AM broadcasting industry. And again, comments listed by frequency. On 620 WTMT, Louisville, Kentucky, has been granted an extension to complete building their full-time facility there. So it may be a while before that one is on. On 760 WVNE, Leicester, Massachusetts, also has requested an extension of time to build this new station. So it is not on the air yet either. Interesting situation and a bit of history on 830 involving WNYC New York City. As we mentioned earlier, we'd have further comments on this station. Since World War II, the government has granted WNYC a special temporary authority, if since 1946 is temporary, to operate from 6 a.m. till 10 p.m. the year round, even though they were never licensed as a full-time station. They are licensed as an L1 station. WCCO has never liked this arrangement and for years and years has been and taking it to court. They finally ran out of courts when the Supreme Court refused to hear and overturn a lower court's previous ruling. And so, after all these years, finally WNYC will have to revert back to their L1 status, which means they will operate with 1,000 watts from sunrise in New York to sunset in Minneapolis. By the way, another note on this station, a number of services, including several of the NRC logs, have listed this station as a 50,000-watt L4 station. This was a recent application but was never granted. The station has never operated with more than the kilowatt they are using right now. So once again, WNYC, within the period of 2 months, must go back to their schedule of sunrise in New York to sunset in Minneapolis. And thus, they have applied to move, as mentioned earlier, to 820 with a full-time operation. Of course, that is just an application, and it looks like that will probably be quite a while before any decision is made on that, too. Some other news in otherness on 840 KWPN in Nebraska and also WREF in Ridgefield, Connecticut. Both those news stations are now on the air. And 850 WLEU in Waterloo, Iowa, that station is now silent. On 870, an application for a new station in De Pere, Wisconsin, has been dismissed, so that one's all over with. On 1130, KBMR, Bismarck, North Dakota, has requested an extension of the time to complete their current CP. On 1150, KDEF, Albuquerque, New Mexico, which went off the air in the middle of 1984, is now back on with an identical format that they had when they went off. 1200, application for new station in Dover, Florida, that has been dismissed by the FCC. On 1230, WSMM, Gatlinburg, Tennessee, application for reconsideration of the CP extension has been granted. Their CP ran out with the station never being built. The FCC at first denied an extension after several had been granted, but that extension has been granted once again, so it looks like WSMM, Gatlinburg, Tennessee, may still get on the air. WYAM in Meridian, Mississippi on 1230. That station has been on since April 8th, 1985. They had been on 1330, became silent while they moved the station to Meridian. They are now on the air with WYAM at 1240. On 1340, KSKI, Haley, Idaho, is now saying their move to 1330 will come around August of 1985. On 1400, KVLA, Vidalia, Louisiana, formerly on 1390, is now on the air on their new frequency of 1400 and is operating from 6 in the morning until 1 the next morning with the CBS network. Also on 1400, WRIG, Wausau, Wisconsin, their proposed move to 1390 in Schofield, Wisconsin, is expected to take place 5/1/85, so that should have happened by the time you receive this tape. Couple things going on 1490, KOAW, Redoso Downs, New Mexico. Station was on the air for about 6 months, then it went silent. It is now back on the air. And KVOZ, Laredo, Texas, their move to Del Mar Hills, Texas on 890 kilohertz is expected to take place in September of 85, according to the station. Well, that's about it this time for another edition of AM Switch. I'm Jerry Starr for the DX Audio Service.
I must say that Jerry sounds very impressive with those old network news logos, wouldn't you think? There is a method to our madness, at least for putting those on this tape. It's a trivia question in the form of, what network did those themes come from? Okay, what network did those themes come from? And we'll have the answer on side two of this cassette. I told you I'd let you know about the Anarch Convention 85 called Anarchon 85, sponsored by the National Radio Club. It's going to be July 19th through the 21st in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And here's exactly what's going to be happening. On Friday from 7 a.m. until 10 a.m., they'll have the setup of the exhibits, and only exhibitors will be allowed in the room at that particular time. At 8 a.m., they'll have the registration room officially opened. At 10 a.m. until 5 p.m., they'll have exhibits on display. At 1 p.m. until 3:30 p.m., they'll have seminars and roundtable discussions happening. From 3:30 p.m. until 5 p.m., they'll have the Anarch Executive Council meeting. Now, all attendees are welcome to attend the meeting, so if you want to get in on the council meeting, that's 3:30 p.m. until 5 p.m. Right after the meeting, from 5 until 7, you have your chance to go out and get dinner on your own at over 20 different restaurants, which are available within easy walking distance of the hotel. And right after dinner, from 7 p.m. on till the wee hours of the morning, there's a wine and cheese party, which is being sponsored by Radio Earth and Miller Publishing. On Saturday, July 20th at 8 a.m., the registration room opens up again. And from 8 a.m. until 3 p.m., they'll have the exhibits on display again. From 9 a.m. until 7 p.m., you can visit some of the seminars and roundtable discussions. From noon until 7 p.m., there's going to be a bunch of tours of Milwaukee, the zoo, the domes, a whole bunch of different places. And from 3 p.m. until 5 p.m., the exhibits will be taken down and the room emptied by 5 p.m. At 7 p.m., they'll have the banquet, which, by the way, requires coat and tie. The speaker for the banquet will be Mr. Clayton Howard of HCJB. They'll also have the NARC Awards ceremonies and the NARC raffle. On Sunday, July the 21st, starting at 8:30 a.m. and until 9:30 a.m., the WRTVH quiz, which will be hosted by Andy Sennett. From 9:30 a.m. until 11 a.m., the International Broadcasters Forum. From noon until 1 o'clock, it's your chance to catch some brunch at that particular time, and they'll have the closing ceremonies for the convention. At 1 p.m. until 3 p.m., the HAP auction. And at 3 p.m., they'll have the roundtable discussion, seminars, and any other unfinished business which needs to be taken care of. And at 7 p.m., the convention committee is officially going to be closing down the NARCon 85 for 1985. And also, just to let you know a little bit about who is going to be some of the speakers at the convention, it will be Clayton Howard for, of course, the banquet. Andy Sennett is taking care of the WRTVH quiz. Tom Steele is going to speak on medium wave and long wave loops and homebrew loops. Bill Cross and Bill Cole will be talking about computer programs related to DX. Larry Miller will have his shortwave guide staff answer questions. Richard Wood from Hawaii will be talking about QSLs and otherness from the third world. Jeff White will have a tentative live broadcast of radio or show, possibly on Sunday. Robert Kramer has some unusual propagation, sunrise, sunset, skip conditions, and receptions to talk about. Fred Osterman will be talking about listening to radio teletype. Larry Magny will be talking about Database International. Don Jensen does not have a topic at this present time to report. And Paul Swearingen does not have a topic at this time to report also. But no doubt Paul will probably razz yours truly for not sending in a muse to the printed publication of DX News. Gee, Paul, I just don't know what's happened to all the time. And you probably heard that about the check being in the mail, too. Well, also, as a final note, I'd like to let you know that the attire for Saturday evening 7 p.m. banquet is coat and tie and is not formal wear. Okay? And that's what's happening at the 1985 NARC Convention, sponsored by the National Radio Club. AM birth control may end. Comes news from Washington, D.C. that the FCC has proposed repealing the so-called AM birth control measure, which places restrictions on the filings of certain AM applications. The rules comprising Section 73.37E exclude otherwise acceptable applications for the new AM stations and major changes in existing AM stations unless those stations would bring service to underserved or unserved areas. Also, the rule would allow minority or public radio stations to file for certain clear channels, even if they don't meet the otherwise applicable restrictions, the FCC said. In the proposal, the commission said it had developed the rule at a much earlier stage when it was necessary to preserve opportunities for stations in underserved areas of the country. Taking into account the maturity of AM radio across the country, the FCC said it questioned the continual demand for additional AM service in the remaining eligible communities. Commenters for the proceedings says that the rules made it difficult for daytimers to apply for full-time AMs. The National Association of Broadcasters agreed that the commission should eliminate the rule. Speaking of new stations, can they survive? A new AM band extension could yield up to 1,800 new stations. Just over a year from now, from April 14th to May 2nd, 1986, the U.S. and dozens other Western nations will be facing off over a negotiating table in Geneva. When they walk away, this country could be well on its way to getting another 10 AM channels, probably in 1989. If the number of stations now operating on high-end channels, like 1490 kHz, is an accurate gauge, the new frequencies could hold up to 1,800 new stations. At issue at the talks will be the proposed extension of the commercial radio AM band from its upper current limit of 1600 kHz up to 1705 kHz. While the expansion has drawn little public attention, considerable debate is underway within the FCC and some other radio circles over what types of new stations should be created and who will get those licenses. As Docket 8090 demonstrated, Mark Fowler's free market FCC isn't swayed much by the argument that radio broadcasters should be protected from new competition in their own ranks. Still, those in the industry may be justified in wondering how many hundreds of new AM stations will survive at a time when the band is already in deep trouble. AM now commands only a third of all radio listening. Many AMs are struggling to make ends meet, and there seems to be a little buyer demand for many AM properties now on the block. New stations in the 1605 to 1705 range would face the additional handicap of being unable to reach older radio sets not equipped to pick them up. In additional news, minority public radio daytimer needs. The FCC is just beginning to form its idea for use of the new channels, but it's already clear that new station locations will be chosen according to a revised version of the requirement list. That was used to locate sites for Docket 8090 FM drop-ins. The update likely will be consisting of communities suggested by various groups where there is a need for a minority or public radio station, first radio service, or an upgrading of daytime-only service. Stations own call letters. Call letters now eligible for trademark protection. This news comes in from Radio and Record magazine that broadcasters were handed a new weapon against confusing similar call letters last week. A federal agency ruled that the stations own their call signs and can register them as an exclusive service mark, a trademark for service that is protected against infringement. The ruling from the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office revised an earlier denial of a registration for the call letters WSM Nashville. To qualify for the registration, a service mark must be owned and in use by the applicant. WSM was turned down when an examining attorney ruled that the FCC owns call letters, but the Trademark Trial and Appeals Board disagreed, saying the FCC neither adopts nor uses call signs as a service mark, so it does not own any such mark. Even prior to its new call sign rules, the agency did not assert ownership of call letters. It acted only as a third party to resolve disputes between two owners of the call letters, the broadcasters who eventually use them. Weapon versus confusing calls. While stations with registered calls will have a much stronger case should someone in the market adopt a similar call sign, benefits of registration include the tripling of any damages collected, the power to force infringements to disclose profits, warnings of the registration through the use of a symbol, an R with a circle inside of it, and an immediate access to federal courts, which in some cases may be preferred to local or state courts. Registration takes about a year and usually costs about $500 to $1,000, which covers attorney's fees and the charge of a $175 for each category in which the service is registered. A lawyer experienced in trademark law, Dowd Loans and Albertson's partner, Albert Lusky, predicts a fair number of stations will register those calls and says he's familiar with one broadcast group which intends to file for each of its stations. A technical snafu costs WKED $2,400. FCC inspectors who checked out WKED in Frankfort, Kentucky, uncovered a host of technical violations, resulting in a fine of $2,400 imposed by the Mass Media Bureau. WKED's shortcomings include improper antenna base currents, lack of control and monitoring equipment for remote operation, inaccurate remote meters, failure to conduct equipment performance measurements, and improper station power, mode, and operating times. In other action, the commission fined WRUN in Utica, New York, $1,600 for two violations. The station failed to maintain effective locked fences around the antenna towers and neglected to conduct a partial antenna proof of performance at least every 3 years, plus a skeleton proof in years where no partial proof was performed. WPE Callbook Project solicits listenings. For the first time ever, in an SWL directory is being compiled for holders of the WPE shortwave monitor call signs. More than 25 years after the inception of the registration program by Popular Electronics Magazine, the Great Circle Shortwave Society has undertaken the monumental task of researching and compiling lists from various sources. as many records are no longer available. During a 10-year period beginning around 1960, the now-defunct magazine sponsored the WPE program under the leadership of columnist Hank Bennett, WPE2FT, and also W2PNA. Some 40,000 calls were issued to SWLs the world over. One of the fastest-growing radio listening organizations around, GCSS, already has a number of members volunteered working as regional editors for their respective call areas. They are now listing the WPE call signs, names, and addresses, city and state only, currently one preferred, to be published in this unique directory. Even if you had a WPE call that was later converted to a WDX prefix under Hank's current program, he's now WDX2FT, for example, we still would like to include you in the call book. There is no charge for your listing. Just send along your own call sign, along with any others you know of, to GSCC, WPE Directory. Attention, Vern A. Weiss, W-E-I-S-S. His call sign is WPE9. GHF, his ham call sign is WA9VLK, Post Office Box 874, Kankakee, and that's spelled K-A-N-K-A-K-E-E, Illinois, zip code is 60901. This may be done with a QSL or a postcard or by letter. If known, please include the date on your registration certificate. The Great Circle also has plans to offer exact reproductions of the original shortwave monitor registration certificates. Information about this or the GCSS Awards Program, the weekly SWL net conducted on ham radio by Larry Wheeler, WPE9AVS, and his ham call sign is K9ZCH, and many other features of regular interest to shortwave enthusiasts are published regularly in the club's newsletter, which can be had for free for a 22-cent stamp, which is sent to the same address. In order to make the WPE call book the most complete and accurate possible, please be sure to get your listings into them. GCSS also hopes to be able to give credit in the publication itself to all sources who contribute to the project with call sign listings. And this press release was signed Paul W. Morato, who is WPE5AVL. His ham call sign is KC5JK. He's the WPE 6 Regional Editor, Post Office Box 8824, Universal City Station, North Hollywood, California, and the zip code is 91608.
It's 6 o'clock in Detroit, 5 o'clock in Bakersfield, Arkansas. I'm Big Jim Edwards, going back one more time.
That's what you heard on 1310 WNIC in Dearborn, Detroit, when they kicked off their reunion weekend. I thought what we do to conclude side one of this cassette, I'd play you some little excerpts and things from the reunion to get you in the mood. Then on side two, we'll have our domestic DX Digest and more from DX Audio Service.
And the countdown of the top hits of 1974. From the top 80, here's Gladys Knight and the Pimps with song 11. KLWD Almighty Supermax countdown to top 80 hits of 74. From Gladys Knight to song 10 from Carl Douglas. CKLW. It was Come and Get Your Love from Redbone. Song 9 from the top 80 hits. Here's song number 8. CKLW, that's Al Green, Shalala Makes Me Happy. Song number 8 as we count down the big 80 hits of 74.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Supermax on the Detroit Reunion Weekend on WNIC, WNIC-FM, Dearborn, Detroit.
The Detroit Reunion Weekend, WNIC.
What time is it? Give me a little more mic. Give me a little more level. 7 o'clock. I can't say it, the big eight, can I? I won't say it, the big eight, baby. I promise, Steve, I won't say it. Give me the soul.
Once in my life.
WNCFM. I love it to death, baby. How you doing tonight, huh? If you thought the Maxer got down and relaxed, you are sadly mistaken, baby. I got the rock and roll. I ain't never let it go. I'm in the Big Apple nowadays, at the Big Eye.
You get the idea. That was a WNIC reunion. We'll see you on side two of this cassette.